I'm fine, yeah. Boy, that's quite a crowd.
Thank you.
That's quite a crowd. Wow. Who's on the other side?
I'm missing some lawyers, I think.
That's weird.
Is that the government?
No.
They're coming in. Maryland Sergeant is probably blocking them.
Good morning. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. To address Judge Silverman's concerns, I want to be clear that I will refer to the home equity conversion mortgage as HECM. Okay.
As what?
HECM, H-E-C-M.
Yes, I noticed. you didn't read the rules either.
Well, just one. We just used one. In the HECM statute, Congress expressly told HUD to be sure.
You could have used the term the statute, and we would have understood it all the way through the brief. You never had to use HECM.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
English is such a nice language.
In the statute, Congress expressly told HUD to make sure that homeowners like Mr. Bennett and Mrs. Joseph don't face foreclosure when the borrowing spouse dies. HUD did the opposite. As a matter of course, spouses are foreclosed on soon after the borrowing spouse passes away. HUD's response to plaintiffs here is, sorry, nothing we can do. And there's nothing that, more so, there's nothing the court can order HUD to do to solve the problem that HUD has created. This is just wrong. HUD can redress plaintiffs' injuries. HUD controls every aspect of the HECM, of a HECM mortgage from cradle to grave. Its brief almost boasts about the power it has to penalize lenders that don't heel to its dictates. But HUD also admits that even if plaintiffs prevail on the merits, it must see to it that the lenders are paid the funds that are owed to them under the mortgages.
Counsel, don't really talk to us. I mean, we know the facts. We know the potential inequities, and we appreciate what you're saying, but talk to us about the redressability. So you're not... You didn't ask for a change in the mortgage term.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's what?
That's correct.
We right. You did not ask for a change in the insurance contract terms, and you didn't ask that HUD had to accept assignment of the mortgage.
Well, we have asked that HUD...
No, I mean as a matter of court relief.
We did in our preliminary injunction motion ask for that, Your Honor.
But not here. That's not what you've... At least as I...
Well, remember. Your Honor, we think that... the statute, the subsection I of the statute, directs HUD to take any action necessary to protect homeowners and lenders and to preserve the program.
So what is it you think in best order as far as you're concerned, understanding the case law, what is it you think that we can give as redress that's permissible that would answer the question you've raised?
Well, Your Honor, at the very least, we think that the court can declare that HUD acted illegally in passing the regulation.
No, counsel, that doesn't answer his question. That's not fair.
Forget that. We don't do that. It's got to be connected to a real case. We don't walk around declaring things lawful, unlawful. So You have to have redress here. That doesn't give your clients redress for us to make a declaration.
Well, let me just say, it does in the sense that if there were such a declaration from this court, our clients could take it and use it in defense of their foreclosure actions, and we think that would be a fairly persuasive piece of an opinion from this court would be persuasive in those state court foreclosure proceedings. But beyond that, the way forward that we see that seems simple and straightforward is that HUD could do what it's allowed to do, or not just allowed to do, mandated to do under the statute, which is to accept, among the things it can do is accept assignment of plaintiff's mortgages, which is part of the HUD, the HECM program. HUD takes assignment of mortgages under various circumstances.
Well,
so
not this
the mechanism's set up.
But not this circumstance. The statute doesn't contemplate this circumstance.
Well, the statute, I think it does, Your Honor. It doesn't specifically address it, but it gives, I think that the statute gives HUD the mandate and authority to do a variety of things to protect homeowners and lenders. And accepting assignment and paying the lenders off now would be among the things that HUD could do. If the lenders are paid off, they clearly have no security interest on which to foreclose, and the plaintiff's injuries are addressed. HUD would then hold on to the mortgages until our plaintiffs pass away or sell the properties or move out, and then HUD would act as the lenders do now
and
sell
the
properties.
And what section in the statute are you resting that argument on?
Subsection I.
Which says what, ma'am?
Notwithstanding any other provision of law, and in order to further the purposes of the program authorized in this section, the Secretary shall take all action necessary to provide the mortgagee under this section with funds not to exceed the limitations of subsection G of this section, to which the mortgagee is entitled under the terms of the insured mortgage or ancillary contracts authorized in this section. And then it says actions, that one of the actions that HUD can take to provide that is to accept assignment of the mortgage, notwithstanding that the mortgagor is not in default under the terms of the mortgage.
Without indicating under what circumstances it can or should take assignment. There's no indication.
It does not indicate when it can or
cannot.
Counsel. In the regulation, HUD has constricts the assignment mechanism substantially more than the statute does.
And that's not is that a provision in the regulation you're challenging?
We have not challenged it, Your Honor, because we did not believe that it was our plaintiffs don't have to show that how HUD's going to move forward.
Well, now
here.
Wait a minute. You've just explained that you've suggested that HUD could buy the mortgage, mm-hmm. but not according to their regulation, which would prohibit it. So how the devil do you get around that if you haven't challenged that separate regulation? An agency can't act contrary to its own regulations.
I haven't looked back at the regulation, Your Honor. I would think that this part of the statute gives HUD very broad authority to undertake this action.
Black letter administrative law, an agency, once it issues a regulation, cannot act contrary to it without amending the regulation or revoking it.
Was this played out in the district court? Did you ask for assignment because it was permissible under the statute, and did they respond that the regulation barred it?
We asked for it in our preliminary injunction motion, but we filed that motion. HUD then stepped in, fixed one of our claims, the claims about the mortgagee letter, and in addition turned to the lenders and instructed the lenders not to foreclose on our clients, so it mooted out the preliminary injunction motion.
But was it an issue? Was it a preserved issue? Was this raised and preserved?
The assignment issue, Your
Honor?
Yes. It was, all I can say is that it was raised in the preliminary injunction. The assignment section of the HUD handbook was appended to our preliminary injunction motion, and we also raised it in our original brief in this court.
Did the government respond below?
Not very specifically that I recall. I think the government said it wasn't authorized to do it under its regulation or words to that effect.
Counsel, I see the AARP is with you on this case.
I work for AARP Foundation.
Okay, well, why the devil didn't you bring a class action challenging the regulation?
Rather than on behalf of these two individuals?
Yes.
Well, Your Honor, we went back and forth about the merits of that, and we did what we did. I'm not clear that a class action would have changed the situation.
All you needed to do was have anybody. You didn't need to have a class action. You could have had five people, and you could have challenged the regulation, people who had not yet entered into a mortgage. So I'm sort of mystified. It was such an obvious way to challenge the regulation.
You're suggesting that we should be able to locate people who have not yet done a mortgage.
Right.
And we're trying to do one. With all respect, Your Honor, it's not so easy to find people who are in search of a mortgage. You know, I mean, most people that are in search of mortgages don't even know that this provision exists. So they wouldn't know to come to anyone to ask why they, can you get me relief because this provision is not in the mortgage. I mean, HUD creates these mortgages without the provision.
I'm astonished at the litigating strategy. But I don't mean to be critical, but I'm just surprised. That would have solved all your standing issues easily.
If there is nothing more, I will sit down and use my time for rebuttal.
You have, last thing, you made the point about if you got a declaration of illegality, it would have an impact in state court foreclosure actions. Why do you think that, other than it, as a matter of law, why is that a good argument?
Well, I think it would be persuasive about the interpretation of the mortgages, Your Honor. And you know, it's not our object here to leave the lenders out in the cold, so to speak, because we think the lenders, if they wanted to make these reverse mortgages, they had to do them under the terms that HUD set out, because HUD would not insure a reverse mortgage that complied with this subsection. So, where our object in this case is not to leave lenders without the funds that they're entitled to, our object is to ensure that lenders get what relief they are legally entitled to, and that our plaintiffs are not displaced.
HUD would not insure a mortgage that complied with the statute.
That's correct. HUD prescribes the terms of the mortgage. It writes the mortgages itself, and it will only insure mortgages that contain the opposite of this displacement, the subsection J provision. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Benjamin Schultz on behalf of the Secretary. This is an APA case in which the plaintiffs have challenged a HUD regulation.
We know that, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. And that regulation does not affect the relief that the plaintiffs could plausibly hope to obtain in this case.
One thought occurred to me as a possible relief. It seems to me clearly that if we just reach the merits of the case and concluded the regulation was contrary to the statute, which I must say appears rather apparent. If we should reach that conclusion, could not the district judge under our instruction issue an injunction preventing HUD from insisting on foreclosure? In other words, under the statute and the regulations, the lender is obliged to seek foreclosure because of HUD's rules, but HUD could be enjoined from requiring foreclosure. That would still leave it up to the decision of the lender.
Your Honor, there's several problems with that. And first, of course, I recognize the merits aren't presented, but the merits issue is more complicated than I think the briefs suggest. And so to the extent that were more fully presented.
I wish it were more complicated. Reading the statute and the regulation, it doesn't look very complicated to me.
Well, Your Honor, I'd be happy to address that
concerned. That's not totally before us, although I will get to one issue on it.
Certainly, Your Honor. But to address Your Honor's question about relief, there's a couple problems with that. One is under HUD regulations that the plaintiffs haven't challenged, in particular 206.7, which we cited in our brief. That regulation makes clear that insofar as the lender is concerned, any amendments to subparts B and C, and subpart B is the subpart that has the regulation that the plaintiffs have challenged, and subpart C is the part that governs the incentives for the lender to foreclose in a timely manner. Any changes to those subparts of the regulations cannot adversely affect the interests of a lender.
We were not adversely affecting the word. The injunction was an injunction against HUD forcing or inducing the lender to foreclose. That would then be the lender's, under the present law, the lender is pretty much required to foreclose in order to protect his insurance. But if HUD was enjoined from enforcing that, the lender would then be free to decide whether to foreclose or not.
Your Honor, if I understand your question correctly, what you're actually asking for is an injunction that would affect a regulation in subpart C. Because
exactly.
And that regulation in subpart C.
I wasn't asking for it. I'm asking.
Certainly.
I'm wondering whether that is redressed. If that remedy were provided, would it redress their injury?
Well, Your Honor, perhaps it would redress their injury, but the more important problem is that that remedy is legally foreclosed because it would adversely affect the lender's interest. And the reason it would
adversely affect the lender's interest to give them an option?
Well, Your Honor, it would adversely affect the lender's interest because when the lender originates these loans, it does it based on the understanding that there's a certain risk model, and at a certain point when the youngest borrower on the loan dies, the lender at that point is allowed to call the loan due and then either foreclose.
Required to.
Exactly, Your Honor.
But if it's no longer required and it's its option, how can it be hurt?
Your Honor, it's the reason it could be hurt, is if I understand your Honor's argument correctly, is because you would be enjoining HUD from applying a provision.
From enforcing it.
From enforcing a.
In other words, the lender would be free to decide whether to foreclose or not.
So I'm sorry. So under your Honor's hypothetical,
yes.
The lender would either have the choice between foreclosing immediately and getting all the benefits of the subpart C regulations, or choosing not to foreclose and continuing to wait without any penalty of the subpart C regulations.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry, my apologies for not correctly understanding your question. So in that case, I suppose the lender's interest would not adversely be affected.
Exactly.
The problem, however, there is there's still an additional problem, which is that the factual predicate of that injunction is still the premise that the loan was ineligible, because that's all that subsection J deals with. And that factual predicate that the loan is ineligible is something that HUD cannot determine when dealing with the lenders. And that's because of that other statute that we cited in our brief, and that's 1709E, which makes clear that once HUD determines to issue a certificate of insurance, that certificate of insurance is conclusive evidence of the eligibility of the loan for insurance in the absence of misrepresentation.
We haven't affected the eligibility.
Right.
I don't understand your point.
The premise of Your Honor's injunction is a violation of subsection J.
Oh, the injunction is violating a regulation that is illegal?
Correct. That's the premise of the injunction.
Well, you know what?
Injunction.
That is not a big problem. Your better argument is that, this is the better argument, counsel, is even if we issue that injunction, it leaves it up in the air as to whether the lender will foreclose or not. Therefore, it's speculative whether or not counsel gets relief. That's the better argument.
Your Honor, I
don't have any doubt about our power to issue that injunction. The problem is that it may not give them the remedy, because it still depends on the lender to make a decision whether to foreclose or not.
Well, Your Honor, in fact, not only is Your Honor correct, I think there's even reason to think that not only do we not know the answer, but the lender is more likely than not
to
the foreclosure in that situation.
Give me the economic analysis.
Sure, the economic is just basic uncertainty. And so even if the lender knows with certainty at some point in the future that it could have this insurance claim, nonetheless, there's always uncertainty out into the future that, for example, the lender may, for one reason or another, would rather have the money now, or it may decide that.
But the leverage that you're giving to the other side is the thing that they asked for first, which is, they have some power, if they're forced into state court, to block the foreclosure.
Well, Your Honor, I think one major problem with that analysis is the premise of their argument is based on contract reformation. And if you actually look at that Central District of California case that they cite in their brief, the entire premise of reformation should have absolutely nothing to do with the legal meaning of subsection J. And so if you read that California opinion, and the law in New York and Maryland is materially similar insofar as what reformation is looking at, the question in contract reformation is, what is the intention of the parties? And so that particular plaintiff was able to get reformation because it convinced the district court, or rather it was able to survive summary judgment by convincing that particular district court that the particular parties to that loan had in fact intended for both plaintiffs to be, for both spouses to be parties to the loan. So the important point, though, is whatever one thinks that of the legal meaning of subsection J, here I think there's absolutely no question that in this HUD-drafted mortgage, the intention behind that HUD-drafted mortgage was that the spousal protection would only go to the youngest borrower on the loan, not to a non-borrower spouse.
Now, so, the one question I have, which goes to the merits because you raised it in the brief, your point is that the regulation is very important, whether or not it conforms to the statute, because it prevents a borrower, let's assume he's a male, just it doesn't necessarily have to be that, a borrower male from divorcing a wife or losing a wife to death and then marrying a much younger wife, therefore extending considerably the period of time for the mortgage.
That's correct.
That is your major concern, is it not?
That is one of our concerns.
Isn't that the major one?
It is one of the major concerns. Another major concern is that at the time that these loans are originated, you want to make sure that you're accurately pricing the risk. And so even if you knew
I can solve both of those so easily, and I'm just mystified as to why you don't do it. Why doesn't the regulation simply state that spouse refers to the spouse at the time of the mortgage? If that's true, it doesn't matter whether the spouse is a borrower or not. Everybody can work the numbers and do the actuarial computation right then. It doesn't matter whether the spouse is a formal borrower or not.
Your Honor, that's perhaps one thing that HUD could have done.
Isn't it obviously solve the problem?
Is it something that
I'm missing?
Your Honor, that's one option that HUD could have done. But even with
it
that,
it doesn't obviously solve the problem.
Your Honor, it perhaps solves that problem of the spouse who is married at some later point in time. But another problem that it still creates is the problem of when you have a spouse who does not have title to the home, and that spouse is nonetheless on the home. If HUD nonetheless chose to do the actual actuarial calculations in a way that particular spouse, then their age would be accounted for, then the other borrower, the one who might in fact want to have a loan that does not protect for the spouse, that borrower would not be able to get the more favorable rate.
You mean the second wife?
So imagine that the husband owns the home and the spouse, his wife is not titled to the home.
Right.
The husband might want to have a loan that does not have a spousal protection, and he, for example, if he's older than the spouse, he might actually want to be able to get more favorable loan terms based on his higher age. If HUD interpreted the regulation the way that Your Honor is talking about and was required to take both spouses into account, then the husband wouldn't even have that option of being able to take that loan that is more favorable when it's based just on him. And since Your Honor is focusing on the merits, I just want to very briefly point out.
I think that's a fair point, but that is contrary to what Congress seemed to say.
Your Honor,
I'm not sure that husband has any right to do that, because Congress seemed to say the spouse was protected, whether or not she had a deed.
Respectfully,
all of your arguments are made as if there's no statute.
Your Honor, if I could just point
really
to one.
Interesting listening to you. I mean, the statute doesn't say what you're saying, and all your economic considerations may be right and relevant and interesting and great for class discussion, except that's not what the statute says.
Your Honor, I see my time is up, but I do very much want to point something out about the statute that I think hasn't been addressed in the briefs yet, that in the event that this case were remanded, we would very much want to point out. And that's, if you look at subsection J, it talks about the mortgage provides that the homeowner's obligation to satisfy the loan obligation is deferred until, and then I'm just going to add numbers here so we can count, 1, the homeowner's death, 2, the sale of the home, or 3, the occurrence of other events specified in the regulations of the secretary. So even if you interpreted homeowner to mean deferred until the death of both the homeowner and the spouse, the way that the plaintiffs are talking about, That doesn't change the fact that another condition that can trigger the loan coming due is other events specified in regulations of the secretary. And by definition, those are going to be other events that occur before the homeowner's death or before the sale of the home.
What's that got to do with it? You can't by regulation put in an occurrence that violates the statute.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, because the other events specified in regulations of the secretary are by definition going to be other events that occur before the homeowner's death or before the sale of the home.
What are the other events?
Well, the other event would be the death of all borrowers or when all borrowers cease to reside at the property as their principal residence. And in any event,
I don't understand your point.
Yeah, I'm missing the point.
It's totally.
So, Your Honor, the point is that this statute is talking about.
Before you go to that, let me go back to this business. Why is it relevant whether the wife, and on our hypothetical, is on the deed? Why is that relevant at all?
Well, Your Honor, what's relevant is not the deed. It's whether or not she's an obligor under the loan.
I know, but you mentioned someone in your brief list, someone that's not on the deed, and I couldn't figure out why that was relevant.
Well, ordinarily, if the person wasn't on the deed,
she wouldn't be a borrower.
Correct.
I know, but if she's by statute entitled to be regarded as a borrower, whether or not she's a borrower, or at least she's entitled to be in the house until she dies, what's the difference whether she has a deed?
Well, Your Honor, the main difference presumably would be that under state law, if she wasn't an obligor on the loan and wasn't an obligor on the mortgage, and she nonetheless had an ownership interest in the home, I suspect that would create a massive impediment to the state law foreclosure because that spouse who hadn't granted the lien or hadn't granted the mortgage presumably would be allowed to stay in the home and could at least defeat foreclosure to that extent.
No, that our hypothetical, the borrower spouse is dead.
Correct, but I thought in your hypothetical the other spouse also was on the deed. Is that?
No, she's not on the deed. What's the difference whether she's on the deed or not? Why is that particularly relevant?
Perhaps I'm just not getting something, but
in your brief, you point out, well, one of the reasons you don't want the non-borrower spouse to be on the mortgage because perhaps she doesn't even have the deed. She's not on the deed. So what?
Your Honor, perhaps we've misinformed Your Honor about our argument. The point that we're trying to make is that when...
Is the deed irrelevant?
Your Honor, the deed is only...
Is it relevant or not?
The relevance of whether or not the spouse is on the deed is it affects whether or not the spouse is going to be an obligor.
Well, that goes around in circles.
Your Honor, I apologize if I'm confusing,
obligor.
Your Honor, but the reason that the obligor is important is because what is being deferred under subsection J is the obligation to satisfy the mortgage. So that's why we care about the obligor. And to the extent that being an obligor turns on whether or not you're the deed, because the lender is unlikely to issue a loan to someone who's not on the deed, and certainly the lender would want, if it's going to have a lien, if it's going to be able to foreclose, it's going to want the obligors to have the entire interest in the property. That's why we would look
to
the deed.
I understand that, because if by statute the spouse has a right to be in the house until she dies, she certainly has an interest, because by federal law she has an interest. In other words, if you changed your regulation to include a spouse who to limit it to a spouse who's in existence at the time the mortgage is made, not a subsequent married spouse, if you limited it to that, I do not understand why there's any increased risk, because you figure out the actuarial tables and just as if she was a borrower. Then you raise, but suppose she is not on the deed. And I say, I don't see what relevance that has. Why is it relevant whether she's on the deed if she has a legal right to stay in the house until she dies?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I'm not sure where Your Honor is getting the legal right to stay in the house
out of a federal statute, that's where.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, all that subsection J is doing is it's telling the secretary whether or not to ensure a
right.
particular
that's
mortgage.
Exactly
it's not.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, it's okay. Not saying the spouse has the right to.
It doesn't guarantee that spouse is going to stay in the house.
Correct, Your
That's
Honor.
Right. But That's... it does indicate what the terms of your insurance will be. But that changes the incentives of the lender at the moment of the death of the borrower.
That's correct, yes.
To move slowly or not, whatever.
I'm sorry, at the moment of the death of the borrower,
if your regulation was consistent with the statute, right?
I'm sorry.
Insurance is still good. So the lender has no incentive to move quickly to foreclose. If the insurance is still in place while the non-lending spouse is still in the house, even though under state law she or he may have to go.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know why the incentive for the lender to foreclose comes from, among other things, HUD's regulations, the ones that haven't been set.
They know they have the insurance in place, because if you had adopted a regulation consistent with the statute, the insurance is not in question.
Right. There's no question here that the lenders have valid insurance, even if the court thought that HUD's eligibility regulation were invalid. But other regulations that haven't been challenged make clear that the lenders have to diligently pursue foreclosure, or there are financial incentives for them to not do that.
I've just suggested you could be enjoined on that.
In
other words, the lender could be free to decide one way or another.
Your Honor, I think we have addressed that already, but as Your Honor did point out, even in that scenario, if the lender were just totally indifferent between foreclosure and not foreclosure, that doesn't make it likely as opposed to merely speculative. And I think it's actually less than a 50% chance, because that uncertainty means that other things could happen that the lender is unaware of.
Would want the money for quickly.
Exactly. A bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
That's a very good argument.
There are no further questions.
Thank you. Did counsel have any time left? Okay. You can have 2 minutes if you need it.
The question of what the lenders would do, we think that is affected by the interest rates that are on these mortgages, which are, their mortgages are some years older than, are some years old at this point, and the interest rates they can get are higher than interest rates that are prevailing today. So we think that they may very well tip the scales in favor of the lenders.
But isn't that speculative?
We don't know. We are just at a motion to dismiss stage, Your Honor, and we have kind of been back and forth here about what HUD making different representations about what's going to happen if the court finds for plaintiffs. Originally they said it was going to void the insurance and they would have no obligation to pay the insurance. And then they came back in on appeal and said, we have to pay the insurance. There's no way we could not pay the insurance. So HUD's view on this has been developing, and we think at least the court should remand the case so that we could get greater clarity about what exactly are the how these things do go forward and what.
Counsel, that's your burden to show standing.
I understand that, Your Honor, but I think that we have alleged plenty here to get standing, in the sense that we have shown so clearly that HUD controls these lenders. It controlled the lenders in our case.
Your argument is that HUD is a 900-pound gorilla, and if they raise their little finger, the lenders will all run for the exits. But is that a kind of, maybe right indeed, but is that something we can take into account in any concrete way?
Well, I don't see why not, Your Honor, because there is history in the record on this, just as there was in the CAFE standards case, competitive enterprises. There is a history that the manufacturers responded to the change in the CAFE standards and made cars accordingly. Well, I think we clearly have laid out a history of how the lenders, HUD says jump and the lenders say how high.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.